ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं चैव ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। Home. Good. Welcome back. We move on today to the next portion, next book in the Mahabharata, the Bhishma Parva. We spent quite some time in the Udyoga Parva. Udyoga means preparation. And so after, and Udyoga, as that name means, preparations for the war. The war begins in the Bhishma Parva, and the battle, I should say. But something else happens in the Bhishma Parva that's really important to us. And that is the Bhagavad Gita occurs in the Bhishma Parva. And we've studied the Bhagavad Gita here, actually, end to end. We've studied three times now, so which is why we're spending time on other parts of the Mahabharata. But here, what we're going to see, starting today, is the context in which the Bhagavad Gita occurs. So having studied the Bhagavad Gita, aren't you a little curious to see how it fits in to the whole of the Mahabharata? So we're going to see. Let's see, to help you get oriented, the chapters I've chosen are sections of chapters 2, 16, and 41. The Bhagavad Gita is chapters 23 through 40. Now you're saying, wait a minute, Swamiji, Bhagavad Gita is chapters 1 through 18. Well, not inside the Bhishma Parva. When we take it out, we study it as chapters 1 through 18, but chapter 1 happens to be chapter 23 of the Bhishma Parva. And then the Bhagavad Gita's 18th chapter concludes with chapter 40. So you can see the chapters I've chosen, chapters 2 and 16 leading up to the Bhagavad Gita, and chapter 41 is immediately after the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll be seeing these excerpts. And let me mention, it's mostly story. Most of the sections I choose are chosen for the sake of Vedantic content. There's not much Vedantic content in what we're going to see, but because the Bhagavad Gita is so important to us, it seems really important to see the context. We'll go through, it'll be mostly story, and for that reason, we'll go through this fairly quickly. We won't spend a lot of time on each verse, as we sometimes do. So this opening section has Vyasa meeting with the blind king Dhritarashtra, and the mood is exceedingly grim, because King Dhritarashtra knows in his heart of hearts that all 100 of his sons are going to perish on the battlefield. And Vyasa comes, and Vyasa is not the bearer of good news at all. Vyasa, we understand Vyasa in the tradition, by the way, as being omniscient. So Vyasa, for whatever power he has, he knows how the war is going to conclude. So he is not the bearer of good news at all. So with that introduction, we'll pick it up. Of course, all of this takes place with the Rishi Vaishampayana reciting all of this material, and we'll start there. Vaishampayana vacha, Vaishampayana tata purva pare sandhye, tata purva pare sandhye. Samiksha Bhagavan Rishihi, Samiksha Bhagavan Vaichitra Viryam Rajanam, Vaichitra Viryam Sarahasyam Bravidam. Sarahasyam Bravidam. So Vaishampayana is narrating this, and in this portion of the narration, he's talking about Vyasa. In the second lane, Bhagavan Rishihi, the Rishi who is Bhagavan Lord, this most extraordinary of rishis, Vyasa, Samiksha, having looked. So I suppose Vyasa has just arrived at Dhritarashtra's palace, and en route to the palace, you can imagine that he has passed by the battlefield. We presume that he has passed by the battlefield on his way to the palace. And having passed by the battlefield, what did he see? Samiksha, having seen Purva Apare, to the east and west, he saw Sandhye, the two armies assembled ready for war. So he passes by the battlefield, he sees the whole scene, everyone is ready to fight, the Pandavas on one side, Kauravas on the other side. Having seen all that, last line, Saha, he, Vyasa, Bravit, he said, and what did he say? Idam Rahasyam, he spoke. Literally, it means that he spoke this secret, is literally what the Sanskrit means. Usually, when they use that kind of expression, it means he spoke it in secret, which means they were alone. There weren't a lot of other people around. Sanjaya may have been there, but other people weren't there. So when they were in a secluded location, Vyasa spoke this to whom? Rajanam, to the king. Which king? Vaichitraya Viryam. Vaichitraya Virya means the descendant of Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya is, what a complicated story. I'm not going to narrate it, but Vaichitravirya means the son of Vichitravirya, and which he's not. So Vichitravirya was unable to have children, so there was an arrangement that would be made in those days. If you're unable to have a child with your wife, a surrogate, an appropriate surrogate can come in, and Queen Satyavati, complicated story. I take an hour to narrate all this. Anyway, Satyavati calls upon Ambika, and calls upon her son Vyasa. Ambika is Vichitravirya's wife, and so she calls her son Vyasa to give a wife. Ambika, a child. And give means without physical contact. Don't ask me how. So without physical contact, Ambika has a child. That child becomes Dhritarashtra. And just to remind you, that whole complicated story, remember Vyasa shows up and he's a rishi. He's been living in the forest. His hair is matted. Maybe he hasn't bathed, and this Ambika is just frightened at the sight of this fellow. And because she's frightened at this, remember Vyasa has been sent to give her a child, and she knows this. But when she sees Vyasa, she gets so frightened, she closes her eyes. And as a result of closing her eyes at the time of conception, her child is born blind. Dhritarashtra. Anyway, the story, we could spend an hour talking about that story. That's enough. Okay. So, What are we saying? Vyasa talks to King Dhritarashtra. Vyasa vacha, Vyasa. Rajan parita kalaste, Rajan parita kalaste, putraschanye sabhumi paha, putraschanye chabhu, tehanishyanti sangrame. Tehanishyanti sangram sama sadyetaretaram sama sadyet. Rajan, O king, Vyasa addresses Dhritarashtra. He says, you have to connect the words te at the end of the first line and putraha at the beginning of the second. Te putraha, your sons. What about your sons? Parita kalaha. They have come to the end of their lives. These are the last moments of your life, of the life of your sons. This discussion takes place on the morning of the first day of the 18-day battle. So in the course of those 18 days of battle, all 100 of Dhritarashtra's sons will die. So therefore, te putraha, your sons, are parita kalaha. They have reached their final moments in life. Not only those, not only your sons, but anyecha, others also, bhumipaha, other kings and other warriors, Pandavas also are going to lose so many on the battlefield. Your sons are living their last moments on this earth, and many other kings and fighters, warriors, are also living their last moments on this planet. Why? Te, they, hanishyanti, they will be killed, sangrame, in this battle. Te hanishyanti, they will be killed. And I don't know if it's sarcasm. Samasadhya, having killed ittara ittaram, having killed each other. Having killed each other, they will all perish on this battlefield. You can imagine the drama of this moment with Vyasa coming and addressing the blind king in this way. He continues.
Yadit twitchasi sangrame, yadit twitchasi sangram, drashtum henam visham pate, drashtum henam visham. Chakshurdadani mehanta, chakshurdadani. Yuddham hetan nishamaya, yuddham hetan nishamaya. So Vyasa, continuing to talk to Dhritarashtra, offers him an option. He says, yadi tu, on the other hand, if, tvam itchasi, if you want, drashtum, to see, enam, this battlefield, enam, or all that's happening, sangrame, in the battle, if you want to see what's happening in this battle, Vishampate, O master of the world, O king, if you want to see what's happening in this battle, wait a minute, Dhritarashtra is blind. How is he going to see what's happening in this battle? Well, Vyasa, as we noted before, is no ordinary rishi. He has different kinds of siddhis, powers, and one of those powers is to grant divya drishti, divine vision, to another person. So you already know that he gave it to Sanjaya, but you may not know that before he gave it to Sanjaya, he offers it to the blind king Dhritarashtra. So to Dhritarashtra he says, if you want to see what's happening on that battlefield, chakshuhu dadani, then I should give it to you. I will give you that divine vision, hanta, O dear one. I'll give you that divine vision so that you can see whatever is happening on the battlefield. What a kind offer. Dhritarashtra feels, you can imagine, he feels so isolated in his palace and being blind. All of his sons are on the battlefield. He doesn't know what's going on. He can't be there with them. So it's a very kind offer on the part of Vyasa. Now this last line, yuddham etat nishamaya, is completely mistranslated. Who's the translator?
the one sitting in this chair. So, as I mentioned before, I translate this a little hurriedly, and I do make some mistakes. So this is a mistake. Shum, the root shum, usually means to be quiet. But with the prefix ni, it means to see or experience something. So nishamaya is in the imperative mood. He says, O king, look, nishamaya, see. See what? Yuddham. Etan, etat, yuddham. See this battle. So look. So to paraphrase the whole verse, Vyasa says to Dhritarashtra, if you want to see what's happening on a battlefield, I can endow you with this divine vision. And therefore, and with that divine vision, O king, look, see. You can see for yourself what's happening on the battlefield. What is Dhritarashtra's reply? Dhritarashtra vacha, narochaye jnati vadham, narochaye jnati. Drashtum brahmarshi sattama, drashtum brahmarshi. Yuddham he tattva sheshena, yuddham he tattva Shunuyam tava tejasa, shunuyam tava. Now you would think that Dhritarashtra would be very grateful for being offered this ability to see whatever is happening on the battlefield. But one thing we need to bear in mind, and that is Yudhishthira is a very weak person. Throughout the Mahabharata, he is presented as being very weak. Most obviously, he's too weak to stand up to his own son. His own son, I guess to use the modern English word, his own son, Duryodhana, goes on bullying his father. And his father can't put an end to it. He's weak. And this weakness is really apparent here, where the blind king says, Narochaye, I don't want, I will not enjoy, drashtum, seeing, I don't want to see, I will not enjoy seeing, jnati vadham. Jnati means relative. I will not enjoy seeing the death of my family members. I don't, and to say it in different words, I don't want to see. Narochaye. I don't want to see the death of my family members. Can you imagine? If your dear one was in a hospital room, dying, can you imagine saying, I don't want to see? It's mind-boggling. Of course you would want to be with your family at the time of their passing. What is his problem? He can't handle the idea that they're all going to die. I suppose there are several elements of it. Maybe he can't stand blood. I don't know. But more significantly, we can presume that he feels responsible for the death of his son. He has allowed this whole thing to play out. From the time Duryodhana was a child, he allowed this rivalry to go on between his sons and the Pandavas, and he allowed it to build and build and build over the years. And Dhritarashtra may be weak, but he's not dumb. So he knows that he's not the only one responsible, of course, but he knows that he is largely responsible for the terrible catastrophe that's about to take place, and perhaps for that reason also, he tells Vyasa, I don't want to see my own relatives as they die on that battlefield. Then, Bhatma, Brahmarshi Sattama. Brahma Rishi is Brahmarshi, a rishi who is a brahmana, actually not, or equivalent to Brahman is Brahmarshi, and Sattama, best, oh, best of sages, Brahmarshi Sattama, Dhritarashtra says. So he says, I don't want to see. He doesn't want to see, but he still wants to know what's happening. You know, because it's his family. I told this silly anecdote again. Allow me to share with you now. When I was 5 years old, TV was fairly new in those days, black and white only. And there was a brand new science fiction kind of show called Outer Limits. I don't know if any of you remember all this stuff. This would be in the 1960s. So anyway, I was 5 years old. I was absolutely fascinated by the show, but it scared the heck out of me. At five, I couldn't handle it. It was just too. I mean, it was way more than I could handle. It was really, really scary. What I would do is I'd hide behind a chair and look out, honestly, from behind the chair to watch this show. And the reason I'm sharing with you this silly anecdote is I think Dhritarashtra is a little bit like that. He doesn't want to see what's happening, but he wants to know what's happening. So he has a counter proposal to give to Vyasa. Vyasa proposes to give him Divya Drishti, but he proposes something different. Dhritarashtra, what does he say? Etat yuddham asheshena shunuyam. Etat yuddham, this war, everything happening on the battlefield, shunuyam. I would like to hear about it. Asheshena, completely. I don't want to see it. Shunuyam. I want to hear about it. It's like me behind the chair, right? I don't want to see it. It's too intense. But I do want to hear about it from whom? Tava, from you. I want to hear what's happening on a battlefield from you, Vyasa, Tejasa. You have the power. With your power, you can see what's happening on the battlefield, and you can tell me what's happening. I don't want to see. I can't handle seeing it, but I want to hear from you what's happening on the battlefield. Vyasavacha, Vyasa. Chakshusa Sanjayo Rajan Chakshusha Sanjayo Divyenaisha Samanvitaha Divyaisha Saman Katayashyanti Te Yuddham Katayashyanti Sarvajnyascha Bhavishyati. So Vyasa doesn't want to just stay there in the palace for the next 18 days with Dhritarashtra narrating all this to him. I suppose he's got more important things to do. At the same time, he wants to fulfill Dhritarashtra's need to be informed about what's happening on the battlefield. So he has a counter proposal. What is that? Rajan, O king, Vyasa says to Dhritarashtra, Sanjaya, your charioteer, who really becomes more like an advisor in this situation, Sanjaya, your charioteer, Samanvitaha, he can be endowed. Esha Sanjaya, this one, this your charioteer Sanjaya, Samanvitaha, can be endowed with what? Divyena Chakshusha. Your charioteer Sanjaya can be endowed by me. Vyasa doesn't need to say. He says, I can endow your charioteer Sanjaya with this Divya Chakshus, with this divine vision, with this power to see whatever is happening on the battlefield. And then, by the way, he hasn't done this yet. He's saying, I will do this. I will give to Sanjaya this power of divine vision. And then what? Katayashyanti. And then he will tell te, unto you, Dhritarashtra, about the yuddham, about the war. He will narrate to you everything that happens on the battlefield. Sarvajnaha cha bhavishyati. Bhavishyati, he will be sarvajnaha. He will know everything that's happening on the battlefield. Sanjaya will tell you all of that. And of course, that sets up the scene for the opening verse of the Bhagavad Gita, where Dhritarashtra asks Sanjaya. They're in the palace. And Dhritarashtra asks Sanjaya what's happening on the battlefield. And this is the origin of that. Then, dishtam he tat purha chaiva, dishtam he tat purha chaiva, natra shochitam arhasi, natra shochitam, na chaiva shakyam samyantum, na chaiva shakyam samyantum. Tato dharmas tato jayaha, yato dharmas tato. So Vyasa is getting ready to leave the palace, and before he does so, he has these words. Can't say they're both words of comfort and words of warning. Both he has to share with the blind king. He says, etat, this war, was dishtam. It was destined. This war was destined, pura, long ago. This war was destined long ago. The word that's used here is dishtam. It's related to a topic we talked about at great length. We talked recently about daiva. Daiva means that which comes from God. Dishtam is another word. It's a synonym. That which comes from God is dishtam. So he says that this war was dishtam. It was destined by Ishvara long ago. Now, let's be very careful in our understanding. Does it mean that Ishvara decided there should be the war? We discussed this at length. Notice what happens if you don't understand the doctrine of karma properly, and you read this. This was destined long ago. Ishvara decided that this war is going to take place. We discussed at great length that daiva or dishta here refers to the fructification of past karmas. Yes, it's coming from Ishvara because Ishvara is karma pala data. You all remember this discussion. Ishvara as karma pala data gives us the results of actions we did earlier in this life or in some prior life. Whatever comes to us as a result of our past actions is called daiva, or here it's called dishtam. So, it's not that Ishvara is making this war happen, but rather, due to the past karmas of everyone involved means not just the Kauravas, Pandavas also. So due to the karmas of everyone involved, this war will take place as a result of karma pala, not as a result of Ishvara Icha. Can I say that again? Karma pala, fruits of one's actions. Ishvara Icha, the desire of God. So the war is karma pala. It's the result of the karmas of everyone involved. It's not Ishvara Icha. It's not God's wish. If Ishvara has an Icha, a desire or will, Ishvara's will is to give us our karma pala. That's it. So we have to understand Ishvara properly. By the way, the results of past karmas need not only be from past lives. What about from this life? So when the Pandavas and Kauravas were children, they fought like cats and dogs. And those childhood actions also have their consequences, karma pala. So based on all of that, Vyasa says that this war is dishtam. It is certain to happen because of the the past karmas of everyone involved. Therefore, he says to Dhritarashtra, Atra, with regard to that war, na shochitam arhasi. You need not feel sad. You need not grieve. You need not be sad or feel. You need not feel bad about the war. Remember, as we observed before, Dhritarashtra probably holds himself responsible. And so here, Vyasa is giving him some comfort and telling Dhritarashtra, you know, it's in American English, if Vyasa spoke American English, it's not your fault. So don't feel bad. It's not your fault, meaning, of course he made mistakes. Vyasa knows that, Dhritarashtra knows that, Bhishma knows that, everyone knows. In fact, everyone made mistakes. But Vyasa is comforting to Dhritarashtra, and he says it's the unfoldment of karma. It's not the direct, immediate result of what you have done, King, O King. And he says further, nacha, and further, nashakyam samyantum, and you're not able, samyam, you're not able, shakya, you're not able, samyantum, to prevent it from happening. You can't prevent the war from happening. There's nothing you can do about it. If there's nothing you can do about it, then you just have to surrender and let karma unfold. So these are the words of comfort Vyasa gives to Dhritarashtra. But then the closing words are not exactly comforting. He says, yataha dharmaha tataha jayaha. And literally it doesn't work. I mean, it's very, very terse. Yataha dharmaha, because of dharma, tataha jayaha, therefore victory. That's literally what it means. Because of dharma, therefore victory. That's the very literal meaning. What does it mean? In context, whoever follows dharma will be victorious, right? That's the sense of it. Wherever there is dharma, there will be victory. Like the very last verse of the Bhagavad Gita says the same thing. So here, yataha dharmaha, wherever there is dharma, tataha, there will be. In fact, you could, I think grammar allows you to substitute yatra and tatra for yataha and tataha. I think the grammar permits you to do that, in which case you can translate it like this: wherever there is dharma, there will be victory. So, where is dharma? Uh-oh. Dhritarashtra knows very well that dharma lies with the Pandavas and Sri Krishna. So he knows that his family, the Kauravas, are not representatives of dharma. So this is not very comforting. Wherever there is dharma, there will certainly be victory, which means victory is certain to come to the Pandavas. By the way, this also points to a general principle that is something so beautiful and fundamental in this tradition. And that is, how can Vyasa say this so boldly? Wherever there is dharma, there will be victory. To paraphrase that, dharma will always prevail. And then we have to add, in the long run. Dharma will always prevail in the long run. In the short run, anything goes. But in the long run, dharma will prevail. How can we say that with so much certainty? And it's not even a matter of belief. It's something to be understood properly. Let's just very briefly, let's look at this. Dharma, to use Pujya Swami Dayananda's very beautiful expression, Pujya Swamiji called dharma part of Ishvara's order. He spoke extensively of Ishvara's order. Ishvara's order refers to Ishvara's intelligence. Ishvara's intelligence is manifest in the world as the laws of the universe, the laws of nature, and the laws of karma. Whatever happens, happens according to these universal laws. These universal laws are manifestations of Ishvara's intelligence, and dharma is a broad term to describe that whole set of laws. Here, to understand dharma properly, you need to go to the root meaning of dharma. It comes from dr, to hold, to support. So that which holds the universe together is dharma. The word dharma refers to this universal order, Ishvara's order. So Ishvara's order is going to be circumvented? Ishvara's order will prevail. Watch this. Dharma is Ishvara's order. How can it not prevail? It's a law of nature. And I was thinking of a metaphor for this. I'll try this. I haven't used this before. Let's find out if this works or not. Dharma is a law of nature like gravity. Can you circumvent gravity? Have you ever flown in an airplane? So if you fly in it, you're circumventing gravity. You're going against gravity using human will and human effort and using an airline ticket. you are violating, I won't say violating is the wrong word, you are going contrary to Ishvara's order. According to Ishvara's order, anything with weight should come down. Of course, how long can you remain up there in the air? So as they say in English, whatever goes up must come down. That's why I said before that in the short run, adharma might prevail. In the long run, dharma will prevail. So in a short run, you can go up for several hours in an airplane. Sooner or later, gravity wins. What do they say? You can't fool Mother Nature. So eventually that gravity brings you back down. So this is an example to support this teaching. Dharma must prevail. Even though in a short run it looks very doubtful, in the long run it must prevail. And that's exactly what Vyasa is referring to here in his closing lines. Yataha dharmaha, wherever there is dharma, tataha, there will be jayaha, victory. And this ends the current chapter. The next chapter has Sanjaya beginning his narration. So now Sanjaya is in the palace with King Dhritarashtra, and don't think that the narration of the Bhagavad Gita began not with chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita is, what did we say, chapter 28? I forget already. Chapter 23, sorry. So chapter 23 is the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, but Sanjaya began his narration, not in chapter 23, he began his narration in chapter 16, which is what we're about to see. So we're going to see part of chapter 16, where Sanjaya begins his narration to King Dhritarashtra. This is the narration that continues and continues and includes the entire Bhagavad Gita. So the narration of the Bhagavad Gita begins here, many chapters before. Sanjayo vacha, Sanjayo. Pratyaksham yanmaya drishtam, pratyaksham yanmaya drishtam yogabalena cha, drishtam yogabale shunutat prithivipala, shunutat prithivipala. ma cha shoke manah krataha, ma cha shoke krataha. So Sanjaya here addresses Dhritarashtra, and he says in the third line, Prithivipala, king, protector of the earth is Prithivipala, O king. Tat shrinu, listen to this. What I'm about to tell you, shrinu, listen. This is the beginning of the narration. Listen to this. I'm going to tell you what? In the first line, I'm going to tell you, yat maya drishtam, what I saw. Yat maya drishtam, that which I saw, pratyaksham, with my physical eyes. By the way, this translation is also not very good. I'm going to tell you what I saw with my physical eyes, with my normal eyes. Cha, and drishtam, what I saw, yoga balena, by the power of divine sight. Here, yoga refers to that power of divine sight that was given by Vyasa. So, O king, please listen. I'm going to narrate to you in the first line what I saw with my own eyes, because Sanjaya was out on the battlefield before he came to the palace. I'll tell you what I saw with my own eyes, and I'll also tell you what was drishtam maya, which was seen by me, yoga balena, by that power of divine sight that was given by Vyasa. Listen. Ma cha shoke manaha krita. Ma manaha krataha. Don't let your mind go into shoke, into shoka. Don't let your mind be immersed in sadness. So everyone's trying to cheer up Dhritarashtra. First, Vyasa is trying to cheer him up, and now Sanjaya is trying to cheer him up. I'm not sure if his narration exactly is going to cheer him up. It will at least satisfy the king's need to know what's happening on the battlefield. So please listen, king, as I narrate to you what's happening on the battlefield.
Namaskritva piturteham, namaskritva pitusteham, parasharyaya dhimate, parasharyaya dhimate, yasya prasadha divyam me, yasya prasadha divyam me, praptam jnanam anuttamam, praptam jnanam anuttamam.
So he's going to narrate this to Dhritarashtra only after acknowledging Vyasa. So how does he acknowledge Vyasa? He says, namaskritya, namaskritva, only after. I guess the grammar is okay. Namaskritva, only after I salute, namaha, salutations, only after aham, I, offer this salutation unto whom? Te pituhu, unto your father. Your father, Dhritarashtra's father, was not Vichitravirya. Dhritarashtra's father was Vyasa. And so he says, only after saluting your father. Who is your father? Parasharya, the son of Parashara. And more complex. I'm not going to tell you that. Anyway, you know the story. we'll skip all that. So the Vyasa, the son of Parashara, I will first worship him, first dhimate, my salutations unto Parasharyaya, unto the son of Parashara, unto Vyasa, who is dhimate, who is extremely wise, te pituhu, your father, only after worshiping that Vyasa, only then will I narrate this to you. After worshiping your father, yasya, from whom? And yasya prasadat, because of whose blessings, may unto me divyam jnanam uttamam prapta. Yodam. May unto me, Sanjaya says, divyam jnanam, this divine sight, anuttamam, this most excellent divine sight, praptam, was acquired by whom? Me, to me. From whom? Yasya prasadat, from Vyasa's blessings. So, before narration, Sanjaya offers this prayer to Vyasa, and then continues, Shunu me vistare nedam, shunu me vistare vichitram paramad bhutam, vichitram paramad bharatana mahad yuddham, bharatana mahad yatha bhulloka harshanam, yatha bhulloka harshanam. Shunu me, listen to me. Hear from me now. Hear from me. Vistarena, in detail, at length. Hear from me in detail, idam, this. This which I'm about to narrate to you, this narration is going to be vichitram. Very involved, very complicated, very intricate. And what I'm going to narrate is parama, adbhutam, adbhutam, amazing. This is parama adbhutam, the most amazing things I'm going to narrate to you, O King. And this most, what is so amazing, he says, it is the mahat yuddham, the great war, Bharatanam, of the descendants of Bharata. The descendants of Bharata are called Bharata. And so those who are descendants of Bharata, King Bharata of ancient times, they are Bharata. In modern times we use the term Bharatiya. That's the same word. So look at this word here, Mahat and Bharatanam, the Mahat Yuddham, the great war of the Bharatanam. Guess where the name Mahabharata comes from? That's what we're seeing right here. So Bharatanam, so Bharatas are the residents of ancient India and modern India. So this is the great war of the Bharatas. And that's the meaning of the epic Mahabharata. It also becomes the name of the war. The war is also called the Mahabharata Yuddha, the war. So he says, I'm going to narrate all of this to you, which is Loma Harshanam. That's the right word, hair-raising. It's in Sanskrit is such a language. They make a distinction between hair on your head and hair on your skin. This is Kesha, this is Loma. You may not have Kesha, you probably have... You probably have Loma. All right. So Loma Harshanam makes the hairs on your body stick up. So hair raising. And he's going to tell it, Yatha Abhut, as it took place. I'm going to tell you to it, tell you about all this in reality. And this is the opening part of the narration. In chapter 16, Sanjaya begins the narration. In chapter 23, he continues that narration. Chapter 23 being chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita. So we've seen the beginning of it. Now, we have a little time left. So now, what happens after the Bhagavad Gita? So I don't need to tell you that the entire span of the Bhagavad Gita is Sanjaya narrating all of this to Dhritarashtra. He narrates the opening, in chapter one, it's all story anyway. So in chapter one, he narrates all the things going on in the battlefield. Duryodhana is talking to Bhishma and kind of bragging. And then everyone blows their conches and they're banging their swords and all of this. And then Sri Krishna, then Arjuna asks Sri Krishna to drive the chariot out on the battlefield. This is chapter one. And then Arjuna, pardon my American English, Arjuna freaks out. seeing his family members all gathered together on the battlefield, and Arjuna starts crying and weeping and all of this. Arjuna throws his, at the end of chapter one, he throws his bow and arrows on the ground. He sits down in the chariot and he says, "I'm not going to fight. Get me out of here." This is this is chapter one. Chapters 2 through 18, you know, this is the shortest version of the Bhagavad Gita you'll ever hear. Chapters 2 through 18 are meant to get Arjuna off his tail end, get up and fight. Of course, in order to get Arjuna to get up and fight, Arjuna has to be addressed at this very fundamental level. Arjuna is grieving in advance for the death of all of his family members. Arjuna is just incapacitated by grief. And this is a big topic. We're not going to talk about it at any length right now. And for the sake of freeing Arjuna from his incapacitating grief, Sri Krishna goes on for 17 chapters, which is the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. First chapter's story, first 10 verses of the second chapter is also story. The spiritual teachings of Sri Krishna begins in verse 11 of the second chapter, continues through into chapter 18. All of this is narrated by Sanjaya to Dhritarashtra, including in chapter 11, the Vishvarupa Darshana. Guess what? Not only Arjuna got to see that, who else got to see that? Sanjaya also saw that. And in the very closing verses of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that to King, "O King, what I saw was so amazing," that Vishwarupa Darshana, he says, "I'm just absolutely thrilled by what I saw and what I've narrated to you, O King." And the Bhagavad Gita closes with that 18th chapter, which is chapter 40, of the Bhishma Parva. Now we come to chapter 41, I think. Yeah. So you can see we've come to the first verse of chapter 41. This is the chapter that immediately follows the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. So now we get to find out what happens then. So earlier in chapter, just a little bit more connection, earlier in chapter 18, Arjuna says, "You have freed me from my emotional incapacitation, nashto mohaha smriti labdva." He says, "You've cleared my mind of all this, and yate chasita takru, and O Krishna, I'm ready to do whatever you tell me." Arjuna says, and he is ready to go and fight. And then very quickly, the Bhagavad Gita comes to an end, and that's where we pick up the thread, so to speak. Sanjaya continues his narration in the palace to King Dhritarashtra. Tato dhananjayam drishtva, tato dhayanjayam drish, bana gandiva dharinam, bana gandiva dharinam, punareva mahanaram, punareva mahara, vyasrajanta maharataha, vyasrajantam maharataha, tataha, then. So this word tataha is what immediately follows the Bhagavad Gita. So right after the Bhagavad Gita is done, tataha, then, drishtva, having seen Dhananjayam, having seen Arjuna. Who has seen Arjuna? And in context, we understand all the Pandava warriors. They're all looking. Remember the scene? Arjuna and Sri Krishna are in the chariot in the middle of the battlefield, which is a pretty odd thing, wouldn't you say? I mean, all the Pandavas are here, all the Kauravas are there, except Sri Krishna and Arjuna are right in the middle of that battlefield. And you can imagine all the warriors on both sides are saying, "What in the world are they doing? And they must have been there for some time. Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. So all the warriors are watching. What is going on? And so finally, so here, drishtva, having seen, and you'll see, and here clearly, the ones who have seen is referring to all the Pandava warriors. We have to understand that from context. All the Pandava warriors, drishtva, having seen Dhananjayam, having seen Arjuna, Arjuna who's described as Bana Gandiva Dharinam, the one who is now holding Dharinam, he's holding Bana, his arrows, and Gandivam, the name of his bow. He's holding his bow and arrows. In chapter 1, he threw his bow and arrows on the ground. So, he has just lifted up his bow and arrows. And you can imagine him standing in his chariot. Now, he's been sitting in his chariot. We have to imagine this. In fact, I'm thinking of the, that was a B.R. Chopra with all of his old... Mahabharata show you how would he have done the scene play? I suppose Arjuna, after this long lecture from Arjuna, he's been sitting in his chariot. Now he stands up, he grabs his arrows and bow and holds them high in the air. Remember, they're still in the middle of the battlefield. He holds them high in the air for everyone to see. All the Kauravas see him holding his bow and arrows. Remember, they've seen him sitting in his chariot like this. And maybe they could see that he was crying. And he was. I don't know if they could actually see or not. We don't have any record of that. But they saw him throw his bow and arrows down on the ground. They saw him down like this. Now he's standing up. He's lifted his bow and arrows high into the air. And then what happened? Punaha eva. Then once again... Mahanadam Vyasrajanta, past tense, Maharataha, all the warriors, and here we'd be maybe the Pandava warriors, maybe both. So all the warriors, Vyasrajanta, they made what? Mahanadam, a great noise, a great sound. Punaha, again. What happened in chapter 1 is both the Pandavas and Kauravas are all blaring their conchas and beating their drums. So now after the Bhagavad Gita, they're doing it once again. By the way, it looks pretty clear from this verse that it's both the Pandavas and Kauravas who are watching. As Arjuna gets up from the seat of the chariot, he lifts up his bow and arrows and he holds them over his head. And then at that time, both the Pandavas and Kauravas, they all start blowing their conches again. Why? I guess we need to know the laws of the rules of warfare. And the rules of warfare is you blow your conch and then you go and fight, right? We can understand that. You blow your conch, and then but then in chapter 1, they blow their conches. But then before they could fight, Arjuna and Sri Krishna drive out on the battlefield. They have to wait. After Sri Krishna and Arjuna are done with their conversation, Arjuna holds his bow and arrows up in the air. It's a signal to the Pandavas and Kauravas that they're... What is that French expression? Tete-a-tete? Is that their discussion? Their intimate discussion on the battlefield has come to an end. Knowing the discussion has come to an end, what do the warriors do? They say, now is time. We thought it was time before, so they blew their conches. So now, once again, they blow their conches, getting ready to attack. Remember in the Hindi movie, Akraman. All right. They didn't speak Hindi on that battlefield, though. All right. Little more. Dadmuscha murita shankhan Dadmuscha mudita shankan vira sagara sambhavan vira sagara sam sahasaivabhyahanyanta sahasaivabhyahan tata shabdo mahanabhut In the second line, Viraha, all the warriors, both the Pandava and Kaurava warriors, they were all muditaha, delighted. Why were they delighted? They can stop waiting. They've been waiting for this dialogue to conclude, and now they're delighted, their wait has come to an end. So therefore, muditaha, they were delighted, and what did they do? Dadmuhu, they blew what? Shankan, their conscious, which were sagara samudbhavan, their conscious, which had come from the sea, from the ocean. So their conscious, they blew with delight, and sahasa, very suddenly, sahasa eva, very suddenly, abhyahanyanta, there was this tumultuous noise. This abhyahanyanta, there was this tumultuous noise took place. Tataha, from that, from the blaring of all the conscious, there was, and this shabdaha, the sound that tataha, the sound that resulted from all the conscious, that sound was mahan abhut. It was a tremendous sound, an amazing sound that came from all those conscious. Tato yudhishthiro drishtva, tato yudhishthiro drishtva, yudhaya susamudyate, yudhaya susamudyate, avaruhya ratatūrnam, avaruhya ratatūr, padbhyam eva kritanjalihi, padbhyam eva. What happened next? Tataha, then, Yudhishthiraha, so the scene shifts. So far the focus throughout the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the focus has been on Arjuna. Just a general comment here. If your exposure to the Mahabharata is mostly through the Bhagavad Gita, you think of Arjuna as being the main character. Outside of the Bhagavad Gita, Yudhishthira is the main character of the Pandavas. Yudhishthira by far is the most important character amongst the five Pandavas. So we're familiar so much with Arjuna from our study of the Bhagavad Gita, but in the bigger context of the Mahabharata, it's really Yudhishthira that's the central figure among the Pandavas. So Yudhishthira, drishtva, having seen, yudhaya su samudyate, he's looking at his army, his own army, I presume, which is susamudyate, which is ready, which is assembled and ready, yudhaya, ready for war. Seeing his own army ready and assembled for war, maybe seeing both armies, it can be understood in both ways. Seeing the armies ready for war, what does Yudhishthira do? He does something very peculiar, almost as peculiar as Arjuna and Krishna driving the chariot out into the middle of the battlefield. That's peculiar. What Yudhishthira is about to do is equally peculiar. What does he do? Avaruhya, he gets down, ratat, from his chariot. And what does he do? Turnam, quickly, padbhyam, he goes on foot. Kritanjalihi, with his hands folded. Huh? Everyone is blowing their conches, they're ready to fight, and instead of moving forth into battle, Yudhishthira gets down from his chariot, starts walking with his hands folded. We'll just see this one more verse.
Pitamaham abhipreksha, pitamaham abhipreksha, dharma rajo yudhishthiraha, dharma rajo yudhishthiraha, vagyata prayayau yena, vagyata prayayau, prang mukhe rupu vahinim,
Pranmukho Ripuvahinim. So what did Yudhishthira do? And second line, Dharma Raja, name of Yudhishthira. What did he do? In the first line, Abhipreksya, having looked at. Having looked at whom? Pitamaha. Having looked at Bhishma. Where was Bhishma? On the other side of the battlefield. So Dhritarashtra, looking at Bhishma on the other side of the battlefield, he gets down from his chariot, and with his hands folded, he starts walking across the battlefield. This is peculiar. Everyone's ready to fight, but Yudhishthira starts walking across that battlefield. Remember, there's a large expanse in between the two armies. He starts crossing that expanse between the two armies, walking quickly with his hands folded, vagyataha, silently. Without saying a thing, what does he do? Prayayao, he goes. Where does he go? Prang mukaha, he is facing them. Facing whom? Ripu vahinim. He's facing the army of the enemies. Facing the army of enemies, with his hands folded, he walks quickly across the battlefield towards Bhishma. And what happens then? Next week. Yeah, just like that B.R. Chopra movie. You always have to, but whatever happens in the next episode, we'll see that next episode next week. All right. Some announcements. Tomorrow, once a month, we have this nice meditation where we do chanting and meditation. So tomorrow we'll be chanting from the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavata Purana, and we'll chant this Shiva Manasa Puja, and we'll be doing meditations based on each of those, and that will be tomorrow at 6:15. We do that just once a month. Today we have a gardening project planned. I think weather outside is okay. I think the rain is over. We have a lot of weeds that need to be pulled. It's a nice job for volunteers. In fact, you can make it your sadhana. You can imagine every weed is like pulling up raga dvesha. You just go on pulling up those raga dveshas. We could use maybe a dozen or even 15. Volunteers who stay back, and then they're preparing a nice lunch for you. So you can come pull up some raga dveshas and have some nice lunch together. The library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.